Our next guest is a man of many talents. He's an award-winning documentary filmmaker by the name of Phil Grabsky. Working across television and cinema for over three decades, Phil's obsessed with unpacking the curious minds of history's greatest thinkers, artists, and composers. This morning, he joins us to talk about his newly released documentary about one of the most influential living artists, David Hockney. Hello, Phil. Thank you so much for joining us.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Now, your latest documentary, David Hockney at the Royal Academy. It's a big one. What can Hockney enthusiasts expect?
Oh, if you're a Hockney enthusiast, then this is going to be great for you, because what we captured were two landmark shows in 2012 and 2016 at the Royal Academy of Arts. I mean, in London, they were attended by 750,000 people. The 2012 exhibition was Landscapes. He'd come back to England, to Yorkshire, his native Yorkshire, and he did the most fantastic. I mean, I'm not every artist is great, but this was a great exhibition, and particularly notable for the fact he employed and used modern technologies.
Mm.
So some of the artworks are using iPad, some of them are using multiple camera technology. Very beautiful, and there's an air of nostalgia there too. Second exhibition, 2016, completely different. I mean, again, essentially commissioned by the Royal Academy for that space.
Mm.
But this time he's back indoors and he's doing portraits. And the show's called 82 Portraits and One Still Life. Somebody didn't turn up, so he did a still life. And he set himself a very kind of rigid process, which was he would spend 3 days. So each sitter was told, all you need to do is sit for 3 days, and at the end of it, we have a finished painting. And it's very democratic. All 82 sitters, well, actually 83 people in the 82 paintings, unknown to him. Some wash his car, some are his dealer, whatever it might be, art dealer. Stress straight away.
Well.
As far as we know. But friends and young people, old people, and you have to see it as a complete body of work. So these 82 portraits, seen in their entirety, are a reflection on us as humans. You know, and he's 76 in the first exhibition, getting on 80 for the second exhibition, but you would not know, in the sense that he's so full of energy, so full of curiosity, so full of technical ability. And if you are a fan of Hockney, you're going to love it. If you have any interest in art, you know, this is our 19th exhibition on screen feature film. Mm. These are films made specifically or initially for the cinema. And we look at the world's biggest exhibitions, biggest artists, biggest institutions, Leonardo, Rembrandt, Goya, Canaletto, Bosch, etc. This is actually our first living artist. And actually we revel in the fact that we have the artist himself, who's very funny. There's a lot of humor in this film, talking about his process.
How was it, considering, you know, all those artists you just named, deceased, not around, and then moving to a living artist who can actually talk us through his process? How was it capturing that?
We always start by, once we've decided to make a film, and I'd say 2/3 of the films are based on major exhibitions, we are very cognizant of the fact that cinema is about storytelling. We'll get an audience that will come, even if it was just a walk through the exhibition. Or, you know, something closer to an illustrated lecture, you'd get an audience. But we're making it for a much broader audience, an international audience, a broad demographic. And the reason you go to the cinema ultimately is to be entertained as well as informed. So we think to ourselves at the beginning of each film, how best are we going to tell this story? What do we have? What are the elements that are available to us? Now, with 18 of the 19 films being about artists that are deceased, then where we look to is, well, what are the paintings that we have? What is on offer within the actual institution, the exhibition? But in terms of the personality of the artist, correspondence, letters, other people's accounts of their experiences meeting and dealing with these artists are very, very valuable. One or two of the latter artists, we've got a little bit of archive footage. It is great when you've suddenly got some footage, and can't underestimate photography as well, stills. So there's a broad variety. But then when we did someone like Bosch, for which there's barely any kind of accounts or letters or correspondence, it's harder. So then you're more reliant on narrative, more reliant on historians telling you things. But we are trying always to make them, you know, cinematic biographies. So we'll just use whatever we have. And in this case, because we have him talking, in some ways we took a rather, I mean, I directed it, took a rather simple approach, which was to show these two exhibitions as well as we could, and then just revel in these three interviews that we did with him.
Yeah, because I mean, like with the your previous works, I mean, it would have been quite interpretive as well of how you perceived those artists as well, would it not?
One of the decisions for us, of course, I mean, we do a lot of research before we start scripting. And in fact, it's an ongoing process during the production. Obviously, when we're filming the paintings, it's giving us an interpretation. When we're interviewing people, part of that is asking them questions that we might know the answers. And part of that is being directed in certain ways because of the answers that we're given. Obviously, we're making choices all the time. Who are we going to talk to? What is the curator's attitude? What is the theme of the show if we're basing it on an exhibition? Ultimately, it has to be, to some extent, our interpretation of the artists. What we're trying to do, though, is not to be too prescriptive. I treat my audience with a great deal of respect, and I think my audience are intelligent. So to some extent, what I'm doing is I'm offering up the exhibition. I'm saying, look, just because it's a major exhibition and it might have got 5-star reviews, you decide for yourself. We've all been to see films that have got 5-star reviews and thought to ourselves, I'm not sure about that. And, you know, one of the dangers with art is that people think, I don't understand it, I'm scared of it, or, you know, everyone tells me this is a masterpiece, but I don't get it. I can imagine people standing in front of, I mean, name your artist, but let's say a Van Gogh, and say, well, I don't like it very much. That's perfectly legitimate. What we're trying to do is give you the opportunity to look, because, you know, we live in a world where people don't really look. You know, everyone's on their phones, or they're just looking at things very quickly, or just taking pictures without even looking. We give you the opportunity to look, start to generate some of your own questions, and then we'll offer you some answers. I think Hockney is genuinely a great artist. I think that in 50 years' time or 100 years' time, when new authors are writing, you know, who are the history's greatest 100 artists, he'll be in there. I'm not sure how many other contemporary artists will be. There's a handful, perhaps. But that's not to say that you can't look at the paintings in the film and think, yeah, not for me. I prefer Michelangelo. I prefer Leonardo. There is a problem. There is always a danger in the art world that people are afraid to criticize, or, you know, a little bit sycophantic with living artists. And there's a moment or two of that even in our film, to be honest, where, you know, people are kind of laughing at his jokes in a social situation. I see that. But ultimately, I think that he is a great artist. And also, I think he's inspirational, because so often these days when people get into their 50s and early 60s, there's that sense of, okay, your working life is now over. Your creativity is over. Time to pass it on, you know, let the young take over. Truth of the matter is, with many great artists, and in this season, this new season of Exhibition on Screen, which starts with Hockney, Monet, greatest artworks towards the end of his life. Cézanne kept getting better and better. Canaletto kept going and kept. I mean, these artists, Goya, Renoir, I mean, so many of them, they get better as they get older. And if they live long enough, and often many of them do, then you have to look, I mean, Rembrandt, you have to look towards the end of their lives to see when they're really great, because they've got an economic stability. They don't care anymore what people think. And also, they're constantly improving. The one thing that's consistent, and you see it in Hockney, is they every single day they're trying to learn about their craft. They never rest on their laurels. And that's a lesson for all of us.
You mentioned all those greats. Are you going to, with Hockney, and now you've done Hockney, are you going to move more into more contemporary and modern artists?
One of the intentions right from the start with Exhibition on Screen was that we would be very broad. I didn't want it to be, I certainly didn't want it to be London-centric. I mean, we're not based in London, we're outside London, but it would have been easy for us to just do the National Gallery and the Tate. So we, right from the very first moment, we were looking internationally. So one of our very first films was Munch from Oslo, the most expensive country you can possibly imagine. But they had an exhibition of 220 of his paintings, never happen again, I don't think. And it was, so we covered that. We've done films in the States, in the Netherlands, in Paris and elsewhere. Currently have conversations ongoing with a project in Mexico, possibility of one in South Africa. Certainly we'd like to do something in Australia in due course. But also in terms of genres, in terms of time period. So we, 2 years ago when I was making Hockney, who's obviously alive, we were also doing Bosch, who's been dead 500 years.
Mm.
It's been quite interesting to me. In this week of screenings in Australia, I started in Perth about a week ago. Actually, the reaction to the film has been, I'm not just saying this, it's been overwhelming, really extremely strong. Because I was a little worried that it was, you know, there's three interviews. Unusually for us, there's an interviewer.
Mm.
It's not a retrospective, as some of our films are. But people are absolutely loving it. And that gives me the sense that actually people really like to hear the artists talk. So it comes back to that question of, well, who are the artists? Who would be the contemporary artists that actually our audience in Russia, in Chile, in New Zealand, obviously in Australia and elsewhere, Japan, Korea, are going to come out to see? And that's something for your audience to think about. Who would that be? You know, Marina Abramovich has had two or three films made about her, popular in some countries, not in others. Obviously, there's lots of British artists, young British artists. But I don't think a Chapman Brothers or Tracy Emin necessarily would travel. Anthony Gormley is quite interesting. I've made a film about him in the past, would do one again, but is he well known enough? I mean, I've had people, and it's nothing wrong with this, but I've had people saying, I don't know who David Hockney is.
Mm.
And he's Britain's most popular contemporary artist. So it may be I have to go in a slightly different route, which is to do something about, you know, the contemporary art of China, or something like that, where it's not a specific name that's known, but it's a period.
Mm. But in a way, it's also, because you mentioned some people didn't know who David Hockney was, is it also a way to expose his work to these people?
Well, there's no question that now that we've made, well, actually even after the first season, galleries immediately got what we were doing. And, I mean, they come to us now. It's great marketing for a gallery. I wouldn't go so far as to say that David Hockney needs any help from me, but we have captured these two exhibitions very beautifully. There will be people being exposed to the work of Hockney.
Mm.
Part of him will like that, because part of any artist is that they want their works to be seen.
Mm.
And part of his brain is a marketing brain, and so it will help next time he takes an exhibition there. So I think that the galleries and individual artists, when they're alive, certainly see the value of what we're doing.
Now, you mentioned in a Q&A earlier this week that you've noticed there's a gap in your series, Exhibition on Screen, with the lack of women. Who are we going to see? How are you going to address that? And why is it so important to you?
I'd like Exhibition on Screen to be as comprehensive as possible. And I think that there's also an absence of artists of colour. Now, female artists, there are simply not as many female artists, great female artists in history. So if I say to you, list all the male great artists, it's a long list. And I say, list all the great female artists, it's a shorter list. Of course, there are some. When we did the film about the Impressionists, I also made an absolute point of talking about Bert Morisot and Mary Cassatt. When we did a film, in fact, one of the reasons I did a film about the American Impressionists, which I knew would be a financial risk, was that it's actually the story of female emancipation in the United States from 1880 to 1920. Women got the vote in the United States earlier than they did in Britain or in France. And part of it is to do with art. It's a very interesting story. Now, we think to ourselves about either historic individual characters who are no longer alive or indeed living. And cut a long story short, we have decided we'd been waiting for a major Frida Kahlo exhibition, and we'd missed one, and there hasn't been one subsequently. So actually, we've just decided we're just going to make a biography,
mm-hmm.
and not based on an exhibition, which is what we've done recently with Monet, what we've done with Michelangelo. Although we're called Exhibition on Screen, our audience don't mind if I curate the exhibition, if you like, you know, by having artworks in the film. So Frida Kahlo. There was a Georgia O'Keeffe at the Tate, but I just didn't have the resources to cover that one. Another area that we are looking at, and unfortunately, often with galleries, it comes down to individuals. You know, we have some, where things work best with us is where we have a really enthusiastic and energetic team within the gallery who just want to help us as much as they can. I was very interested in the Museum of Contemporary Art that opened in Cape Town, because it's the first Museum of Contemporary Art in Africa. And, you know, female African artists are really interesting, and it's a fabulously interesting story. I can't claim to know all their work, but what I've seen, I think, is very exciting. Unfortunately, our contact there, who was enthusiastic, has left. So we've been knocked back a little bit. But that's, you know, that's another way of us addressing that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you mentioned before that, you know, we can list all the great men in art, but not as many women. I mean, there were great women artists, but of course, history always writes about men in the patriarchal society. Are there some like great women that we just still need to uncover, but they're just hidden away in the history books?
Well, because it's a patriarchal society, I mean, there are fewer. I mean, I made a film, one of my first films that was released in Australia was The Life of Mozart. But when you look in detail at his history, obviously he had a very talented sister, Constanza. And she just wasn't given the same opportunities as him. And that's partly internally within his own family, but it was also the society in which they lived. It would have been virtually unheard of for the Vatican, for example, to have commissioned a female artist to have done the Sistine Chapel or the walls of the Vatican's own personal living spaces. So actually, women are more absent until you get, I guess, to the 19th century. I personally think Bert Morisot is a really interesting artist. And actually, if there were an exhibition of her work, that would be one I would look at quite carefully. Mary Cassatt, I've made a film about her for television. And you see that with artists. Those artists that are free of commercial economic concern can be completely free in their art. Cézanne actually was born essentially to, well, his father became kind of one of the wealthiest people in Aix-en-Provence. Cézanne never had to sell his paintings. He never had to work to commissions. He wasn't even that bothered about exhibitions. So what this meant was he just focused on his art. Caillebotte is another one like that. Manet is another one like that. Degas is another one like that. Where artists have to think about the market, it affects what they do. One very small example, Van Gogh does some flower paintings, and we look at them, we think, oh, that's very nice. Actually, the reason he did these flower paintings is because he'd heard that flower paintings sold. Renoir, some of his well-known paintings are portraits of families. Their commission works because he had to earn a living. So the answer to your question is we're aware of it, and you know, where ideas, when there's an exhibition, when there's a period of art, then you know, we'll explore it as best we can.
Is it also the gallery's responsibility to kind of push for more artists of colour and women?
They would probably respond that they do. And I think that there's all, you've got to be, yes, but they would also say, but of course, it's got to be legitimate. But I think there is an element, frankly, of, you know, galleries are in this, are also, you know, have their funding issues, and big exhibitions do generate income. So it is probably, well, it is certainly easier sometimes, although it might be complicated to put on, but it's probably a safer bet for them to put on a Vermeer show than a Mary Cassatt show. To be fair, though, most of the galleries that we deal with, it's very eclectic what they do. I think that there are plenty, there is a lot of variety. Plus, you've got all the contemporary arts awards, which are looking at contemporary artists. To be honest, the big failing is television. I think television has abandoned largely its public service duties. You can't only, and I have this conversation with commissioning editors a lot, you can't only respond to what you think is the audience's desires. If that were the case, my son would only eat burgers. You know, so I have to say, actually, you know what? My son's called Billy. You know what, Billy? I'm taking you to a sushi restaurant tonight. What, raw fish? But then you go, and actually, what do you know? They actually enjoy it. You have to introduce people. And if you make films in an entertaining way, which we, I think we do, I mean, the audience reaction to our films is really strong. But I think that, you know, if you make the films in an entertaining, informative way, actually, they could be about anything. There's plenty out there. But television is frightened of it. And so television, you know, is weakening, is fracturing, but it has been traditionally the most important way in which people are accessing visual arts in some ways. Also needs to say here, actually, you know what, we're not putting on this soccer match tonight, or we're not putting on another drama about some teenager that's being killed and how the murder squad going to solve. I mean, I'm sick to death of that kind of stuff. Mm. Actually, we're going to put on an art show at 8 p.m. And you're going to be surprised, because after the soap opera, instead of it going to a crime thriller, it's going to be an art show. And some of you will just can't be bothered to change channels, and you'll watch it. And you know what? You'll enjoy it.
I'm sure they will. So now that David Hockney's out in the world, what's next from Exhibition on Screen?
Well, one of our interests has been to look at Asian art, or actually and specifically China and Japan. But again, slight nervousness on our part. If you know, what is the story out of Japan? And if we just did the art of Japan, that's very broad.
That's a lot of history.
That's a lot of history. And but there's a big exhibition right now which has travelled from Japan to the Netherlands. It's now in the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, called Van Gogh and Japan. It's a really interesting story. To understand Van Gogh, and indeed really to understand properly Cézanne and Degas and Monet and all the rest of them, you have to understand there was a moment in the late 1850s, early 1860s, when Japan opened its doors to the world. They'd been shut apart from one island where they traded with the Dutch. And Japanese art arrived in France and was available to be seen in art galleries, art shops. And all these artists, not least Van Gogh, went and saw it and were absolutely stunned. And it changed their art in various ways. And you cannot understand Van Gogh's art without understanding this. Why did he go to the south of France, where he does all these famous paintings? Well, because he was looking for the Japanese equivalent. The cherry blossom, he's copying Japanese artists. And so that's a very interesting film. We're doing a very broad film about the life of Degas, who many people might know for his ballet dancers, but actually there's much more to him than that. And he was multi-talented, so he was a great sculptor. I mean, many things, drawer. I mean, you know, prints and drawings as well as paintings. And then a film which I'm directing called Young Picasso. Again, one of the things we try to do with all our films is, you know, these people they're not just born.
Mm.
How are they created? You know, what are the historical contexts? What moment were they lucky? Who were the peers? What's the importance of dealers? And, you know, I'm a great believer in the economic context. It sounds a bit dull. It's not. It's actually fascinating. If you don't have a dealer selling your paintings, you can die of starvation at a certain period in history. Anyway, we're looking at the with young Picasso. I want the guy who arguably is the most popular, anyway, or greatest artist of the 20th century. He's born in this declining industrial port of Malaga in the southern Spain, not known for producing, you know, artists. I mean, Spain is wonderful, but it didn't tend to come from the south. So how does he emerge? How, by the age of 25, does he emerge or lead up to the creation of a painting called Demoiselle d'Avignon, which art historians now acknowledge or suggest changed art history?
Mm.
It was so radical, in fact, that he showed it to people when it was completed, and the reaction was so strong he actually hid it for 10 years. But it still changed art history.
Mm.
How does he get there? And it's a story about Malaga and Barcelona and Paris. So those three are all in production. But it's also my job to encourage people who might not have thought of going to the cinema to see a film about a David Hockney. It's funny, it's entertaining, it's informative. If you've got any interest in art, it's extraordinarily colourful. It's provocative. You don't necessarily need to like everything you see in the film, but it at least sets you thinking. And it's also 85 minutes when you're not on your phone. And that's got a value too.
For sure. But Phil, thank you so much for joining us here on So Hot right now.